Good day to you. You are listening to the Key Moment Podcast. Harry Gras and Rokos Lopik talk to people about key moments that had a profound impact on their lives. What did these moments look like? What have you learned from it? And what can other people learn from your experiences? 3 years ago, my wife and I, we made a decision to buy a house in the south of France and rent out holiday homes, talking about key moments. A couple of weeks ago, we had coffee in a nice crêperie in Montflanquin, a beautiful little village on a hillside 14 kilometers from our home. I heard a man at the bar ordering a coffee in English. It's not that unique because lots of Brits, Americans, Aussies, and Dutch people live in this part of France. Anyways, I walked up to him, introduced myself, and we had this instant connection. Vince and his husband Michael, like us, bought a chateau in the countryside. I invited him for this podcast because Vince, besides a unique personality, is a storyteller. Yesterday we also visited their chateau. Why would anybody want to buy a chateau that is very old in the French countryside? More about that question in a second recording, because we will meet again for an interesting conversation on this topic. In this first recording, we mostly talked about cancer, a fox that carried rabies, and getting married. Thanks for tuning in on the Key Moment Podcast. So Vince, we're here in Montflanquin.
Montflanquin, if you're local.
Kang, yeah. Kang.
Everything ends in NG, you know.
Yeah.
Kang-kong.
We met in a place, a crêperie, it's called La Bastide, about a month ago or something. I walked up to you, you were at the bar. I could hear you're an American, and that's always, special to me because I go there a lot. I love Americans. Yeah, my New York
hat,
Yankees cap. We met, you came to our castle, we got to know each other a little. Could you explain to the listeners who you really are?
Sure.
Really? We'll come up to that later.
Yeah. Well, so my partner and I, born and raised in Pasadena, California, near Los Angeles. And my family is French. In high school, American high school, my partner took German, but I took French with the same teacher. Mm-hmm. Frau or Madame Hogera, depending on which class you were in. But I've always wanted to come back to France. And so we were traveling more to France than to Germany as mm-hmm. our relationship expanded. And about 15 or 16 years ago, a friend of ours said, you know, you come here so often, why don't you just buy something?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, we can't afford this. And then I started looking on the real estate listings and said, wow, yes, we can. Yes, we can afford this. So we started looking. We spent about a year just driving around different parts of France. And we vacationed here several times, and I always felt this strong pull to this area. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a nothing area. It's the bread belt. It's where they grow all the food that feeds France, but there is no great attraction. I think for me, it's always been about the people. Uh-huh. When we first got here as homeowners, we got the keys to the house and we were eating at that crêperie where I met you, mm-hmm. our first meal as French homeowners. And the owner at that time, a woman named Fabienne, came to the table and said, oh, you're vacationing in Nani, the previous owner, Nani's vacation house. And I held up the key and I said, no, we just bought it. And she immediately ran back in, got two glasses of champagne and said, welcome. And it was so amazing.
Yeah.
I was used to Parisian French. We were not as... It's still very nice, but not as warm.
Yeah.
And little by little, we, you know, got to know people. People died, people were born, times change. We're into it 14 years now. Our friends who had children, those children are now adults having children. And we stayed friends and stayed connected to these people. And it really does feel like home.
Yeah. Yeah. When I met you, you were like moving around. Your body language was somebody who is well known in this village, right? You know a lot of people.
I don't want to make that sound like I'm bragging because it does sound a bit arrogant.
No,
but
why?
I feel so. A week ago, I came here because you know we're spending most of our time at the other house. And a week ago, I came back to the village, and there was an American couple in the boulangerie having coffee, which was very unusual to have somebody having coffee in the bakery.
Yeah.
And so as I'm waiting in line, I kept saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. But when I finally finished, I walked by the table and said, hi, you're American. That's all Americans tend to do to each other. And so we started talking, and there are a couple who are retiring and they're thinking about moving to France and they're looking at all these areas. And I just had this replay of our experience. And I said, how'd you end up in Montflanquin? And they said, you know, passing through, we're considering it, but we're not sure. And as we're there, Eric, the retired butcher, comes in and says hello. And Sabrina, the woman who works at the art gallery, came in and said hello. So I'm introducing them. And I realize that they spoke very little French. Rudimentary, not even phrases, just words. And he had said, you know, we want to experience and we want to make sure we can integrate and meet people. How is it better to be in a village or out in the country or a city? And, you know, it really ultimately, I think, for the best experience, if you really want to be immersed into a community, you have to live in a community, whether that's in a village, in a city, in a town, in the countryside. But 99% of that depends on you.
Yeah.
You have to go out there and shake somebody's hand and you have to be the one to start the conversation because the reality is you're the person being dropped into an existing situation. So my partner's an introvert. I am kind of an extrovert, I guess, but I think the majority of the people we know here are because I fearlessly went out and said,
yeah,
I'm your neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. And you're an outgoing guy. I could see that.
Sometimes
you were not surprised at all when I walked up to you and said, oh.
Not at all.
Let's shake hands.
People do. I forget. I also have a bad memory, so people say hi, and I rack my brain trying to think about
it. It's funny because Europeans always tend to say about Americans, they're superficial, right?
Yeah.
And I always said, well, it's totally bullocks.
Well,
because I know New York. I went to other cities in America. If you take the opportunity to walk up to somebody that tell you their life story, right?
Generalizations are easy to make. You can make generalizations about the French, about Americans, about the Dutch, about everybody. I mean, I've heard them all, especially living in a community with so many different cultures.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you hold the power to be the person you want to be perceived as.
Right.
And to some people, I talk too much. And to other people, it's pleasant that I talk too much.
Yeah, you were apologizing when you visited at our chateau that
I did talk too much.
Am I talking too much? No, it is.
I blathered on. I did blather on.
Well, to my opinion, it is the way the world should be, right? Sure.
Yeah, a little more open,
talk, communicate.
A little more,
yeah. And while we get older, people teach us that stay guarded. You know, it's dangerous out there.
I think ultimately, and that's it. It's how you want it. I can tell pretty quickly if somebody's not going to fit into my personality trait, and I don't fault them for that. I just know that as time goes on, it's going to grate on they or me or both.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's with measure. You came up, you approached me, I felt comfortable. And it's weird because I haven't known you or Marianne very long, but I feel like I know you.
Yeah, right. It's the same.
It's a comfortable thing.
Can I interrupt you for a
moment? Yeah, yeah.
Because I, like I do, you speak with your hands a lot.
All the time.
No, I love it. It's okay because I know how it works, but try to
keep them down so I don't stop.
Well, don't bump the table because then like you're going to hear it.
Hands in
it's
lap.
Okay. No, I speak with my hands too. But when you put them down,
I can do them both ways.
So Vince, you know, this podcast I'm making, it's always about key moments in people's lives. Is moving to France a key moment?
Yeah, it is.
I guess, right?
So I've had several key moments in my life that I didn't realize were key moments until I was submersed in it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cancer scare that hit me 24 hours later in the car by myself. Just, oh shit, I have cancer.
Mm.
Luckily, it's all taken care of and I'm well beyond it. Getting married. After being in a relationship for 15 years, never thinking that marriage was an opportunity or even wanting to, it wasn't until I was standing in front of a judge that it just hit me like, holy shit, like this is real. I've had a lot of those moments here, a lot of those moments. When we bought the house, it was just kind of it was almost like buying a car. It just seemed to happen and I didn't really, it just kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until much later that I started to realize the specialness of it and the shock sometimes of it, mm-hmm. about, you know, the fact that we are guardians, we are people who need to care for this house that has been standing for mm-hmm. centuries.
Mm-hmm.
During World War II, there was probably an old woman trembling behind the curtains in her living room, thinking, what's going to happen to me and my family?
Right. Yeah.
There were other situations that happened in this village that I just realized, like, we are such a small little piece of that. But our story is now part of this. As we've been here, more and more North Americans and Australians are moving into this area, which is really kind of shocking,
mm.
because when we were first here, it was only the Brits and only the Dutch. Mm-hmm. And we were a very special, you know, unusual group of Americans coming in. There were only three or four of us at the time. And
yeah.
Now they're all over.
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising. It takes I feel like it takes a little bit of our specialness away.
Yeah.
But with good cause, you know, somebody else comes in to grab the charge.
Did you have to go through, because you started talking about chemo's, talking about cancer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did was it a big fight to overcome that?
No, it was a shocking thing. I woke up, I won't get into too many details because it is a bit personal, but I woke up, I had a doctor's appointment that morning and I was taking a shower and I felt something unusual. At the end of my appointment, I mentioned it to my doctor. He looked at it and said, we need to get you on a table. Within 5 days, I was having it excised for biopsy. 3 days later, I got the news that in the biopsy, the entire cell that had just started to explode was encapsulated in healthy tissue. So they literally cut it out in the biopsy.
Yeah.
So I was monitored for 2 years and then they said, we got it. Like it may or may not come back. But it's one of those things where you can't really. Did I tell you, sorry, I'm jumping topics, but it's the same topic.
It's okay.
Did I tell you about the fox with rabies?
No.
Probably not. No. So we were living in California for a long time. We bought a house on the East Coast to renovate in the state of Maine, mm-hmm. on the border of Canada. And into about a year into the renovations, I was walking out the back door and I was blindsided by a little furry fox that had rabies.
Mm.
And he attacked me and bit me, broke the skin. And, you know, you hear about rabies, you think you know. I've dealt with health scares, but I go to the hospital immediately. They give me the treatment, which is very expensive and very painful in the United States. And without the treatment, there's a 99.9% chance that you will die.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the treatment, there's a 97.8% chance that you will survive.
Mm.
So they're explaining it to me, and I never really thought about it, but all the vaccine does, all the treatment does, is prevents the virus, which is inside my body, from killing me.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do anything ever again. You just take this 1 month long process of medication. But we were having dinner here in Mont Blanc, and actually in Cancun. Uh-huh. We joked about the name of Cancun. We're having dinner with a group, and one of the people at the table was a doctor with the World Health Organization. And he was very excited to meet me. He had heard about me, which I was a little taken aback by. And he said that I came up in conversation because of the rabid fox attack, mm-hmm. and that he just had a woman who died after 18 years of taking the medication from rabies. And you just think, wow, that, you know, you talk about moments. Here I am in the middle of nowhere, France, at a dinner table on Christmas morning, or the next day, Boxing Day, the English call it. And this man is telling me, you know, he just met that 0.001% person who actually gets rabies after the treatment 20 years down the road. So I don't know where I was going. You were talking about the cancer. Yeah, cancer. So health, the health thing.
It's a good thing that you did that, because foxes, they carry a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah. They're cute. They're funny little cartoon animals.
Don't touch them.
Until they kill you. I mean, that's just it. We have there's a caterpillar here that we also had in Maine. Our little town in Maine was the only other place with this caterpillar. And it has these little hairs on them. There they're called brown tail moths. Caterpillars. Here they're called chenille processional caterpillars.
Yeah, yeah.
They spin in the pine trees, the cotton candy.
I have them in my garden.
Well, you know they can kill you.
I know.
They literally have little laser beams shooting out there.
I burned them.
Yeah, you got to burn them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's those things, you don't realize something until it's in your face.
Right. Like, about this cancer and the fact that, because you said I'm kind of extrovert. Which is probably in this case a lucky aspect of your character, right? Because you went to the doctor, you told him, listen, I feel this, and you were very early.
Extrovert or not, I think I'm also a hypochondriac.
Oh, good. Now I understand.
So I'm very much in
touch. But it saved your life,
right? It did save my life. And it's funny because I have other friends who have this cancer. And it's a cancer that is thriving among the under 50 population right now. Mm-hmm. I'll be just blunt and say it. It's colorectal, and it's exploding across the world right now. In fact, France is now testing people of all ages to see if you have the cancer.
Yeah.
But it's very aggressive, and it's also very personal because it's in a place that people don't want to know they have cancer.
Right. Yeah.
But they most of the people I know who've had it are dead. Because they were embarrassed to talk to their doctor about it.
Yeah.
So I was lucky.
The other key moment was getting married, right? It's funny that you describe these situations. One day you make a decision, not very conscious of making the decision. Yeah. Then the thing
happens and it's boom.
Bam. You're in front of this altar. Yeah. There's this, I don't know how you call these.
Well, in our case, it was a judge, but.
A judge, yeah. And it suddenly it hits you. Do you get on these profound key moments? Does your mind start, should I do this or should I?
No. That's kind of a funny thing. I'm a decision maker. When I decide a path,
that's it.
Takes a lot to take me off of that path. Good and bad trait. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it works out for me. Sometimes it doesn't. But the marriage thing was weird. We, you know, we've been together since 1987 on and off. And California had just legalized gay marriage, and I knew something was going to come and screw it up, because the conservatives were pushing this Proposition 8 on the California ballot to overturn it. So we had always said, we're not going to get married even if it's available. It's a ridiculous institution. It's nothing I really need to belong to. Mm-hmm. But I was working at a job in San Francisco for 18 months and flying. One of us was flying back and forth to visit because we were living apart for 18 months. And it was my turn to come down to San Diego. And it was a 4th of July weekend, the national holiday in America. And so I was coming down on Friday, flying back Monday night. But the holiday was on Friday, mm-hmm. something like that. So I'm in my car, picking up my cell phone, which you're not supposed to do. And I send a text and I said, you know, I'm coming down. We could get married Monday if you wanted to. I just have a feeling this is going to get overturned and there may be legal implications. Do you want to get married? Very weird, very like sticking, you know, taking a path and saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. And it was almost clinical. For me, it was about, you know, up until then, taxes were a nightmare because we had to file as two single men, but collectively it was a very complicated process. So Michael responded, yeah, sure, let's do it, because that's who he is. He's typically very emotional, where I'm a little more methodical. Mm-hmm. And so I flew down. We had our weekend, 4th of July weekend. On Monday, I told Michael, I said, just in case there are any news crews, because it was highly televised at the time, I said, dress like we're going to go pay a tax bill. I don't want anybody sticking a camera in my face. So we show up and we're sitting in a room, a waiting room, and there's these two heavyset lesbians, one in a wedding dress and another in a tuxedo. There's several other couples, gay couples, that are all doing the same thing. And this really old, these two old guys, and I'm talking like 80s, 90s, come in together, and they're both wearing, you know, plaid jackets with paisley ties, you know, very uh-huh. generational, very, very sweet. But they come in and they're helping each other fill out this document. And the entire time, my eyes are captivated because there's a heavyset girl with a ponytail chewing bubble gum next to a guy who obviously looks like he's freshly in the military with a haircut and mm-hmm. acne and very young. And the lesbian starts asking, like, you know, she just announces, the reason we're doing this is we live in Kansas, we have two adopted children together, and we're getting married in every state where it's legal, because it wasn't yet nationally recognized. Mm-hmm. She said, we're just going to go to every state until we can do it nationally. And so one by one, everybody was talking about how they met and how they did stuff. And halfway through the conversation, the heavyset girl with the ponytail and the sweatpants chewing her bubblegum, in a really, really uneducated Southern American accent, said, y'all disgusting, and got up and walked out of the room. And with that, the young military person who was about to marry her said, I'm very sorry, I just met her Saturday night, and I'm about to be deployed, so we thought we'd get married. And I guess that kind of led to my, like, shock later that day. But I'm processing it thinking, you know, these two women flew from Kansas to prove to their children that their relationship was valid. They've been together a long time adopting children. These two old guys who probably fought in World War II and landed in San Diego are getting married in their 80s or 90s. All these couples that are, like, struggling. Me, really just, like, clinging to the fact that it's probably going to be illegal soon. Like, we need to do this now. Even that minimal thing. But for this girl, it was disgusting. Although her situation, she just met a guy 48 hours ago and was marrying him just because he was being deployed in the military and she was potentially going to get his benefits. Her cheapness of the institution, she still felt was superior to all these people struggling to get the equality that she so frivolously just looks at as if it's just a piece of paper.
And this soldier maybe was saved by the bell, right?
I hope so.
I hope he didn't marry her.
I don't think she could have run very fast, but I hope she ran fast that day.
Or maybe they should get married and he should educate her on being a world citizen.
People change, but you know that to me, when people talk about equality, I thought, wow, that's really amazing, because all we wanted was to be on that playing field. And this girl discounted what she had to such degree that it was okay for her, but not for these people who severely wanted it, instead of somebody who just, you know, met somebody 48 hours early. So anyway, you know, 40 minutes later, I'm standing in front of a judge and he starts reading, you know, the sanctity of marriage, you know, till death do you part. And I just lost it. And the funny thing is, I'm not a crier.
Does that look like when you lose it?
Oh, it's not good.
No?
I ugly cry. I wail. So I'm not a crier. In fact, I had a childhood trauma that prevents me from crying and also angers me when other people cry. There's a thing in my mind that feels that it's manipulative. 99.9% of the time it's not, but it clicks on me and I feel like I'm being manipulated by somebody's emotional need. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, I don't just cry, I wail, and it's ugly. Michael jokes that there's only one other time I ever cried in front of him, and that was during Les Miserables. And there's a song that in the musical, there's a song when he's in the bed and he's dying, and she's talking about all the things that they've done and all the things he wanted to do, and for some reason it triggers something in me. On Valentine's Day, 30 years ago, I was in London by myself, and I decided to go see a play, and it was the only one I could get tickets to. And I've seen it a couple times, but I remember sitting in the balcony next to this very nice couple who we'd shared, before the show started, we shared stories and names and such. And they invited me to go have supper with them after the theater, and so very sweet. And then, of course, that song came on. The whole audience is quiet. You just hear, you know, the sound. And they clapped at the end and got up and ran to the theater. Wow. Like, it's embarrassing. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's ugly crowing. It's ugly crowing. So
Vince, we have so much to talk about, and I usually make these podcasts like 30 minutes, 45.
Sorry, I just pushed that.
At max. I'm sure we're going to meet again and talk about a lot more stuff. It's funny because while we are talking, I see your eyelid.
Twitching.
There's a tremor in it. Well, what does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. So, fact.
It's not that you are nervous or...
I have Bell's palsy. Mm-hmm. It's a paralysis of the face.
Oh, okay.
I've had it 3 times in my life, which is a very unusual. And it's also switched from one side to the other. And the last time I had it, it was so severe that I did not get my smile back. Uh-huh. This is as high as I can lift the side. Oh, my eye twitches. But as you can see... Wrinkles? No wrinkles. It's like free Botox.
Is that so?
Yeah, because the 7th nerve or the 6th nerve, I forget which one it is, it got caught here.
Okay.
And it got all jambled up, but it controls all the movement here. So you look, my skin's a little smoother. The doctor said...
Well, you look good anyway.
It's only going to cost me half as much for the Botox as I get older to fix the other side. But
is there something, you know, there's a lot I didn't ask, but is there something that you... think should be in this episode? Or?
Well, you know, it's funny. We had talked about moving to France. I think that was the impetus of this session. And so I think for me, what keeps coming back in my mind is you get what you give. Mm-hmm. And I think moving to France is a valid expression of that. You're always going to find a good person. You're always going to find a bad person. You're always going to find a nice person. You're always going to find a mean person. But you need to be the person you need to be, the authentic, and I hate the fact that people use that word all the time. You need to be the authentic you. Mm-hmm. And in being the authentic you, those people who you want to attract will come to you. And sure, you're going to get some mean and some bad and some this and some that, but you can figure that out with those people as they come through. But it's really important for you to be who you want to attract. Tracked,
right,
to be the real you.
That's very nice. That's a good lesson. And maybe we could make one agreement, because meeting you really enhanced the pleasure of us living here. Is that enhanced?
Oh,
a good word, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't even meet your husband yet. don't move.
Okay, I promise.
Anywhere else. No, I promise. Stay for
We're
a
stuck.
While.
This new house is going to take years to complete.
Stay for a while because it's great.
Well, if I can say one thing about the two of you that has been amazing for me. So I've known Eric the Butcher forever, mm-hmm. but I did not know about those anchovies. Mm-hmm. And I've gone back six times and bought them since.
Oh, yes?
They're so good.
They're good,
so,
huh?
Thank you for that. Lovely apero with the I keep calling them sardines. They're anchovies. They were so good.
Yeah, let's make an agreement. We'll talk again, and okay. we'll make a second episode
okay.
because there's much more to talk about.
I think so.
I really want to thank you for showing me your house, which you're going to sell because you bought this chateau, right? And maybe next time
we can do the chateau.
We'll do a special on what happens to a person like Marianne and me and you. And Michael, when you buy a chateau.
That's a good idea.
Good idea, right?
Perfect, yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Key Moment Podcast. Thanks to Vince for making time for this recording. We will meet again for more talks and stories. You can find Rocco Slopik Chateau Mondou on Instagram, Springcast, Spotify, LinkedIn, and every thinkable social media platform. I hope you will share this episode with your network, your friends, your family. Hand us some stars on Spotify, write a review. Thanks again for listening and hope to meet you for another episode of the Key Moment Podcasts.